series of biographies of great Rabbonim. Today we will discuss the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Isaac Schneerson. May the learning of Torah be a merit for myself, yourself, for listening to this shiur. It was in 1895, the fifth leader of the Chabad dynasty, Rav Sholem Baer, was terribly pressed for time and shockingly overworked. From early morning until late every night, he was kept busy by the constant stream of Hasidic delegations, by harassed and unfortunate people who sought his advice and guidance, by the numerous important public meetings he had to attend, by the many journeys he had to take on behalf of his Hasidim, and in addition to all that, he had to supervise and instruct his disciples, besides attending to his daily needs for Torah and Hasidic study. He was badly in need of a secretary who would take some of this enormous burden off his shoulders. The choice fell upon a 15-year-old lad who was very rapidly proved that his talent for communal and civic activities did not fall short of his ability in the field of study, at which he was outstandingly brilliant. The young man was Rabbi Yosef Isaac Schneerson, the son of the Admiral Rav Sholem Baer. Rabbi Yosef Isaac was born in 1880 in the town of Lubavitch. As assistant to his father, he attended all the meetings and conferences called by the Rabbonim to discuss the predicament of Russian Jewry. When he was 17 years old, he married a relative, the granddaughter of the Tzemach Tzedek. During the week of the Sheva Brachas, his father announced the establishment of a chain of yeshivas, which he named the Tomcheb Temimim Yeshivas. These were the famous houses of learning of the Lubavitcher Rebbes, of which the Chofetz Chaim said they instill a spirit of vitality into all yeshivas. The actual management of these yeshivas was placed in the capable hands of the young Rabbi Yosef Isaac, and he it was who bore the responsibility for their development and success. But this was not enough of a challenge to such an active person as Rabbi Yosef Isaac. He considered it his duty to establish an enterprise which would provide a living for Talmudic scholars and employ Jewish workers. He traveled from city to city, visiting the greatest Jewish authorities at that time, and obtained their support for his enterprise. He wished to establish a textile spinning and weaving factory where only Orthodox Jews would be employed. His enthusiasm for the project and his powers of persuasion gained him the support he sought, and the factory was erected in the city of Drubne in the Mogilev Oblast of East Belorussia. It eventually provided a living for over 2,000 people. The Chabad Hasidim enjoyed special privileges in Tsarist Russia because of the support and encouragement given to the Tsar during the Napoleonic Wars by Rabbi Zalman Schneer of Laeli, the founder of Chabad dynasty. Rabbi Yosef Isaac took good advantage of these privileges and was a constant visitor at the government offices in St. Petersburg, now where he intervened on behalf of the Jewish citizens of Russia, who, with the exception of the Chabad Hasidim, were very badly treated. He was singularly successful in his endeavors and managed to mitigate the lot of many of his brethren. His earnest desire to get things done, his drive to accomplish things, was boundless. Sent on a mission abroad on behalf of his father, he met with royalty and nobility in an effort to have them take an interest in what was happening to the Jewish communities in Russia, and to use their influence and high office to put a stop to the terrible pogroms to which the Jews were subjected. That mission, as with everything he did, he was crowned with success. It would be, in fact, be no exaggeration to say that Rabbi Yosef Isaac did not recognize the word failure, but as is the fate of effective and successful Jews, he earned the animosity of anti-Semites who began plotting against him. Their evil ideas resulted in the rabbi being imprisoned four times during the years 1906 and 1911, on trumped-up charges of subversive activities. The Russian authorities finally withdrew the charges and released him from prison following indignant protests that made his release conditional upon his ceasing all activities which could be interpreted as antagonistic towards the regime. This, however, did not stop Rabbi Yosef Isaac from continuing with even greater intensity his drive to instill the Jewish youth of Russia with a deep and abiding knowledge of Torah and Judaism, which was one of his activities which the authorities took most exception to. In 1920, while Russia was still in the throes of the Bolshevik Revolution, Shalom Bear died and his son Rabbi Yosef Isaac was proclaimed the sixth head of the Chabad dynasty. There were difficult times and Lubavitcher Rebbe had a host of problems to contend with. Those were the days when the Russian people stood at the crossroads, knowing not whom to follow or in which direction to go. New forces were constantly rising to the top, only to be toppled over within weeks or even days by more powerful and more bestial forces. Rivers of blood flowed throughout the country as death and injury were meted out without let or mercy. The Jews were, of course, the victims of each and every new regime that came to the fore. They were the first to suffer. It fell upon the broad shoulders of Rabbi Yosef Isaac as leader of the Chabad movement to organize the Jewish communities so as to ensure a continuation of Jewish existence and to maintain the Hasidic spirit lest it be extinguished. Alone he stood in this battle against the bloodthirsty forces which threatened Jewry on all sides, and alone he faced the constant danger of attack and even death at the hands of both the revolutionary and counter-revolutionary forces. The manifold activities and amazing accomplishments of the Chabad leader during those trying times are legendary. But one thing was manifestly clear to all, in particular to the Jewish section of the Communist Party, and that was that as long as Rabbi Yosef Isaac lived and guided the Chabad movement, the communist regime would never gain the upper hand over the Jews of Russia. In an effort to remove his influence and deny the Jewish communities his leadership, the hated secret police, the Cheka, arrested Lubavitcher Rebbe in 1927 and incarcerated him in the infamous Semilino prison in Leningrad. But before that happened, he had been brought to the headquarters of the Cheka for interrogation several times. On one occasion, a Cheka officer had lost his temper with the undaunted and indomitable rabbi. Whipping out a revolver, he pushed into Lubavitcher Rebbe's face and screamed, "You see this toy? It has changed the religious ideas of many people before you." Rabbi Yosef Isaac was not to be intimidated. Quietly said, "That toy may well frighten people who have many gods and one world. But I have but one god and two worlds, this one and the hereafter. So your little toy can neither frighten me nor stop me from carrying out my duties and responsibilities towards my religion." It was 9 days after the Feast of Shavuos in 1927. The time was midnight. Rabbi Yosef Isaac had just bidden farewell to the last of his visitors for that long day. Suddenly there was a loud banging at the door. "I'm afraid we are in for trouble," was the rabbi's comment as he went towards the door. Two men, officers of the Russian secret police, forced their way into the house. Behind them was a squad of soldiers fully armed. They searched the rabbi's house from top to bottom, looking for incriminating documents. When, towards morning, nothing had been found which was any of importance, they ordered the rabbi to accompany them, saying that he was under arrest. He climbed into a car which was standing in front of the house and he was driven to the Leningrad prison. Rabbi Yosef Isaac later described what transpired upon his arrival at the Spelina prison. "I was determined," he said, "to confront them without fear, to be firm, speak my mind regardless of the circumstances or the situation in which I was placed." The rabbi was escorted to the interrogation room and told to fill out a questionnaire. "These questions do not apply to me," he told his captors, "and therefore I cannot answer them." "Everyone who comes here does as he is told," was the rough reply of the Russian officer. "I did not come here," Rabbi Yosef Isaac quietly retorted. "I was brought here, and those who brought me here know exactly who and what I am. Why, therefore, should I do something I do not wish to do?" "Do you know where you are?" the officer barked at him. "Or are you stupid or something? What's your name?" "I know where I am," the rabbi replied, "and I'm not stupid, thank God. My name is Schneerson. I shall not put pen to paper. You may write whatever you like." The officer realized he could not intimidate this man. Picking up a pen, he barked questions at Rabbi Yosef Isaac and wrote replies on the questionnaire. "What's your occupation? Divinity and the teaching of religion and Hasidism." "Religion, divinity, what are they? One Hashem created us. He created everything from the creeping thing that creeps upon the earth to the human being. I can't write things like that, the officer complained. We do not recognize what you call religion. Who forces you to write, Rabbi Yosef Isaac pointedly asked. As far as I'm concerned, you certainly need not to write anything. Just then, three senior officials entered the interrogation room. The rabbi recognized one of them as the man who had driven the car which had brought him to the prison. This man approached the table where Rabbi Yosef Isaac sat and asked to see the questionnaire which the rabbi should have completed. He refuses to answer the questions, the officer explained. Don't you know you have to do as you are told here? The official said, turning to the rabbi. I hope you are truly aware what this place is. You had better do as you are told, he concluded warningly. The rabbi sat calmly smoking his pipe. When the official stopped talking, he said, let me ask you a question. I was promised that my talis and tefillin would be brought here for me. So far they have not been, and I want to know whether that promise will be kept. I was also told by the officer who arrested me that I was being brought here for questioning only, and that after several hours I would be allowed to return home. In fact, the officer promised me that even adding, although I'm a communist, my word is my bond. The senior official looked at the rabbi for a moment, obviously unsure whether the questions were seriously meant or that the rabbi was trying to make a fool of him. Brusquely, he dismissed the matter, raging, whoever told you that was merely trying to mollify your family? Rabbi Yosef Isaac jumped up in a fury. I'm a religious Jew, he shouted, and I wish to pray. Nobody can stop me from serving my God. As to your questionnaire, I've already told you. I was brought here, and those who brought me here know who and what I am. I have nothing to add to that. I'm Rabbi Schneerson, the son of the famous Rabbi Lubavitch, a respectable citizen born in Lubavitch, studied in yeshiva. For some 8.5 years I lived in Rostov and 3 years in Leningrad. I study and teach divinity, Hasidism, and expound upon halachic law and Jewish religious obligations. Like all Orthodox Jews, I have no connection whatsoever with politics. That's all I have to tell you. The self-possession and poise of Rabbi Yosef Isaac and his obvious sincerity impressed the senior official, who quietly said, that's quite sufficient. The rabbi was given number 26818 and escorted to a cell. His escort was the senior official, and on the way to the prison block he whispered to the rabbi that the charges against him were extremely serious and were punishable by death. He inquired whether there was any message the rabbi would like to convey to his family. Rabbi Yosef Isaac made no reply. He wished to consider his situation calmly and unemotionally. His only request was that his talis and tefillin be brought to him so that he might pray. The official handed him over to the clerk in charge of the cell block and suggested that he make his request to him. The clerk was a sour-faced, aggressive man whose reaction to the rabbi's request was to bark. You are a prisoner now, so stop asking for things you're not entitled to. But the Lubavitcher Rebbe did not lose his self-composure. Pointedly, he said, I am not so sure that only I'm the prisoner here, or whether your clerks are not also in prison. For as much as I'm forbidden to leave, so are you unable to leave, and as much as I'm subject to discipline, so that same discipline obliges you. That discipline includes the obligation to respect the prisoner and to respect his religious convictions. The law permits me to pray, and it is my privilege to do so. Without a word, the clerk left the cell, leaving Rabbi Yosef Isaac to his own thoughts. The rabbi could not help thinking that the reason for his being in that place was to turn it into a place of worship to Hashem. While he was pondering the subject, the clerk returned carrying a small bag with him. Is this yours, he asked. Yes, Lubavitch Rebbe replied, adding, and now, if you don't mind, please leave me alone here that I might pray. What? The clerk screamed at him. Do you think you can turn this place into a synagogue? Under no circumstances. And to this the rabbi firmly replied, under any circumstances. But the clerk would not give him this talis and tefillin. Rabbi Yosef Isaac declared a hunger strike. He informed the prison authorities that he would neither eat nor drink until he had been allowed to lay his tefillin. Even 2 days later, when he was brought before an officer of interrogation and notified that the charges against him were that he headed a religious movement, established illegal houses of religious instruction, and dealt in foreign currency which he received from abroad, the rabbi merely stated that he would answer no question until he had been given his talis and tefillin and could pray as he desired. His determination and obstinacy finally forced the authorities to give him, and his bag with the talisman filling was handed over to him. He had succeeded in gaining his right to pray, but with that he opened the door to long and terrible all-night sessions of interrogation and third-degree torture. The infamous Russian methods of inquiry were practiced against Lubavitch Rebbe in all their bestiality, and not one word of his incarnation was allowed to appear in the Russian press. Nobody outside Leningrad even knew he had been arrested. Finally, friends managed to send a telegram abroad reading, "Our father is ill," from which the recipients understood that he had been imprisoned. Action was immediately taken. The Russian embassies and consulates all over the world were inundated with a flood of cables protesting his arrest. Delegations called upon the ambassadors demanding his instant release. 18 days after his arrest, the wave of indignation which his incarnation had aroused all over the world brought his release. The Russian judges sentenced Rabbi Yosef Isaac to 3 years of banishment in Kostroma, a town on the river Volga in the Ural Mountains, but for the intervention and protest of Jews everywhere, the Russians would most certainly have executed him, if only to express their animosity to religion in general and to the Jewish religion in particular. The day the Lubavitch Rebbe was due to depart from Leningrad, the railway station was crowded with Hasidim bent on wishing him Godspeed. His parting words to his disciples and well-wishers were, "We were exiled from our land and forced to live in subjection among the nations of the world. Our bodies were subjected to the punishment of exile, but our soul and our spirit will never be enslaved. In matters of religion and the pursuit of our obligations towards the Torah and the mitzvahs, we are subject to no alien authority. There is no power which can compel us to deny our religion. We are a stubborn and determined people and declare with all the unyielding obstinacy of generations, 'Touch not mine anointed and do my prophets no harm,' as a pasuk has found in Sefer Tehillim. Our prayers to Hashem are blessed and will strengthen us and enable us to overcome physical suffering and torture. Proudly shall we carry out the mitzvahs, for imprisonment and torture are temporary and will pass, but the Torah is permanent and will live forever." The comparatively mild sentence of banishment meted out to the Lubavitch Rebbe was, however, viewed with the greatest dismay by the Hasidim, and they persisted in their self-appointed task of proving that Rabbi Yosef Isaac was guilty of nothing which could be interpreted as contrary to the laws of the country. So effectively did they prepare their case that only 10 days had passed since the rabbi's departure from Leningrad, when the Russian government cancelled the order of banishment and enabled him to return. That day, the 13th of Tammuz, is still celebrated by the Chabad Hasidim with wine and rejoicing, as it was in 1927 when they named it the Feast of Redemption. But what were the rabbi's impressions of his imprisonment? I will not deny that I look back on my incarceration with something akin to pleasure. He said, explaining the surprising statement, he continued, "There are several established stages in man's progress through life: childhood, boyhood, adolescence, adulthood, middle and old age. Then there are man's abilities and capabilities which demonstrate whether he's average or extraordinary. His temperament, too, has a great bearing upon his life. Is he shy and an introvert, or gay and an extrovert? In addition to all these, divine providence occasionally presents man with special opportunities and circumstances which can change his entire temperament and enable him to develop abilities which place him far beyond the average and allow him to view the real meaning of life on earth. The most powerful and most forceful of such opportunities and occasions is when a man is obliged to fight and undergo torture and suffering for an ideal, particularly if that ideal be the maintenance and safeguarding of religious principles. Such a period of mental and physical suffering, if successfully survived, must remain engraved upon man's mind and feelings as his period of enlightenment." The Lubavitch Rebbe came to the conclusion that it was of vital importance to establish Chabad groups outside Russia. Shortly thereafter, Yeshiva Tom Chetimimim was founded in Warsaw, Poland, and the first Chabad groups were established in England, the United States, and Canada. Rabbi Yosef Isaac went to Latvia, where he settled for a short while before setting out on a journey to several countries on a mission aimed at benefiting Jewry as a whole. One of the countries he visited was Eretz Israel, where he decided that the Holy Land would head his list of activities in the future. When World War II broke out in the summer of 1939, Rabbi Yosef Isaac was in Warsaw. His Hasidim, who by now were spread halfway around the world, begged him to come to the United States, but the courageous rabbi's reply was that he would not leave Poland until he was no longer able to rescue others. He succeeded in getting to safety all the yeshiva students who held foreign passports and managed to assure the welfare of his yeshiva students. Throughout the heavy bombardments of Warsaw, which almost destroyed the town, he waited and suffered with the rest. Only when he finally realized there was absolutely nothing more he could do did he agree to leave Poland. He went to the United States, where he believed his services were far more needed than in Israel, at that time known as Palestine. He viewed his activities in America as rescue work, and indeed, what the Lubavitch Rebbe accomplished in that country was nothing short of phenomenal. The youth of America was not noted for its religious tendencies, and the Jewish youth swarmed with its ride. Yet Rabbi Yosef Isaac Schneerson achieved what no rabbi or religious leader had been able to do before. He attracted vast numbers of young men, some from homes where any trace of Judaism had long since vanished. He instilled the seed of religious fervor in them, but what was even more important, these young men placed themselves at the services of the Chabad leader and were ready to carry out his sacred biddings at all times. Their motto was redemption now. It would be no exaggeration to say that Yosef Isaac commanded an army of disciples in the United States, a commander force ready to execute his orders under any and all circumstances. He would send representatives of the Chabad to the most outlying Jewish communities of America, where an Orthodox Jew had never been seen before. Rapidly, they would set up a Talmud Torah and collect the town's youngsters there for Hebrew and religious study. They managed to get into army camps and even to public schools, where too they led services and gave lessons. With his customary drive and energy, Rabbi Yosef Isaac was instrumental in setting up a publishing house which printed Jewish books, thus introducing the Hebrew language to the masses. These books were beautifully printed and illustrated and most attractive to the eye. The Lubavitch Hasidim in America were fully cognizant of their great responsibilities and knew that at any moment they could be called upon the Lubavitch Rebbe to leave for distant lands. Many were sent to the farthest corners of Canada, Australia, France, Morocco, and Tunis to set up centers for Jewish religious education and guidance. Whenever a Chassid received such an order, he would immediately pack his suitcase and set off. What is more, he would succeed in his mission because the Rebbe had shown how to go about their task and had demonstrated the superfluity of the word failure. At the close of World War II, a large contingent of Chabad Hasidim managed to get out of Soviet Russia. This wonderful group of God-fearing, highly Orthodox and sincere Jews had survived the vicissitudes of persecution and war and were now discovered in all their glory within the Russian den. Go to Palestine and establish an exemplary Chabad settlement, read the cabled instructions sent to them by Rabbi Yosef Isaac. Without hesitation or thought of the problems that might lie ahead of them, this hardly band of Hasidim set sail for the Holy Land of Israel and there established a delightful settlement in the former Arab village of Safria. Today, it is a flourishing center of Hasidic life and a vital contribution to religious education. The sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe was indeed a giant among men. Whatever he did was done to perfection. Even the diary he kept was a masterpiece of prose and proved that as a descriptive writer, he would have had few equals. When in 1950, in his 70th year, Rabbi Yosef Isaac Schneerson was gathered to his father's, he left behind him a legion of fervent Hasidim, more viable and vital than ever before, despite the tremendous upheavals of his times. His place as leader of the Chabad dynasty was taken over by his son-in-law, Rabbi Nachum Mendel Schneerson, of blessed memory, who thus became the seventh Lubavitcher Rebbe. With this, we have concluded our shiur today on the Lubavitcher Rebbe.